Welcome into the KSO show. Mason Voth, Derek Young here with you as we get set for the penultimate home game for the Wildcats in 2023. Baylor coming to town as K-State tries to get their seventh win of the season and make sure that they at least can't have kind of the gross looking record of 6-6 attached to them. You get one more win, you guarantee that doesn't happen, and you win. There are a lot of other outcomes that could work out in your favor. And again, K-State is in a position where they could still win 10 games this season. That seems pretty significant, and a lot on the line for other things and other players this weekend as well. So plenty to talk about, even though Baylor doesn't provide a ton of ammunition themselves because they have had a pretty dismal year. They are 3-6, and I'm not shocked at all that Dave Aranda is floundering at Baylor. Could have told you that. Not a Dave Aranda guy. Anybody that was, you got swindled by him. He had one good year. Unfortunately, since then hasn't been as great, but we'll probably talk a lot more about what K-State can do and what they didn't do against Texas and how they correct it against Baylor, because Baylor has not really shown the propensity this season to be able to really prevent teams from doing what they want to do. If you look at what has gone on against Baylor, Texas beat them 38-6. Utah, with like their third string quarterback, was able to get a substantial enough lead. They won in Waco. Texas Tech dominated Baylor this season. Iowa State got a big lead early. And all four of those games that I mentioned, those were home games for Baylor, not even road games. The Bears, their two road games this season, they've won at UCF and at Cincinnati. Obviously, if you're worried, like, oh, well, they're pretty good on the road, consider the competition that they faced in those games as they get ready to come to Manhattan. So we'll see what the Bears and the Wildcats do for us on Saturday at 2 o'clock. But D.Y., I'll start with you. Just general thoughts heading into this game, whether it's about K-State and what they need to do, or maybe you have something about Baylor that is worth pointing out.
Yeah, they are undefeated on the road. You got to remember, one of those road wins was against UCF. And they were losing by 4 touchdowns in that game. So not your typical win either. I would say for Kansas State, as long as they are locked in and engaged in their preparation, so everything that's already happened, actually, like what happens between now and Saturday is really not going to move the needle. They needed to be locked in and prepared and in their preparation from Monday through Thursday, Monday through Friday. So the hay's in the barn, so to speak. We'll see how much they were engaged, how much they refocused, and how much they recovered between, you know, what was a heartbreaking loss in Austin to what will be a home game against Baylor that will test their maturity and resiliency and recovery. Because as long as K-State did what they were supposed to do throughout the week in terms of preparation, and they aren't flat to begin the game on Saturday and give Baylor a little hope, then this shouldn't be close, right? So, and in the past, under Chris Klieman, they have responded well to losses. It hasn't been an issue. They haven't really had the hangovers. And throughout this season, they've been dominant at home. They've been dominant against bad teams. So everything we know suggests that Kansas State won't have a hangover, but I don't think that they've had a loss of that magnitude either.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And look, I think K-State, the response after their losses this year, they've been pretty good in them. It's been unfortunate in some ways that they've now been in the position where this is going to be the third time that they have to kind of bounce back after a loss, where you feel like, man, if we just done one more thing, we probably come out winners. But they have responded nicely. And a lot of people will point out that, yeah, the three good teams that you've played this year so far, K-State has lost to. That is more than fair, because you know, I do that to a lot of teams. I did that to Baylor a lot last year. Baylor was 6-6 last season in the regular season. They only beat one team with an above 500 record, and that was Texas Tech. K-State's in a position right now where there's a realistic chance, not counting Troy, who, you know, obviously they beat in the non-con, but there is a legitimate chance that K-State only beats one team with a 500 record or better this year, and it's KU. Now, Iowa State, if they win this weekend, Iowa State will be in that boat, but Iowa State has to go on the road at BYU. So it's not out of the question that Iowa State loses out and they end up 5-7 or something. So K-State could have that type of season, but when that goes down, you still have to give a team credit for not slipping up and losing a game of that magnitude, because there are other teams out there that will have that happen to them. I mean, KU is going to have to fight this weekend and not beat Texas Tech. I think KU is only like a 3.5-point favorite at home against Texas Tech. So, I mean, that's obviously there are smart people out there that think that Texas Tech is going to give some good fight and really push Kansas, and KU has to make sure they don't drop that game.
Yeah, same goes to said for Oklahoma State. They play at UCF. I think that's at 2.5 now. So there's a lot of people that think the Pokes are on upset alert when they go to Orlando this weekend. And remember, they could be having a letdown. They just won the last bedlam.
Yeah. No, very true. They are definitely in letdown spot city, more so than anybody.
It's a bad matchup for the night. So the line's a little stinky there that Oklahoma State's less than a field goal favorite when you got the league's best running back going against the league's worst run defense.
Yeah, it's true. I don't – Ollie Gordon might have himself a heck of a day.
He did get into us at 300 yards.
Yeah, I mean, look, I already talked about how easily K-State and KU both ran all over over UCF. And Texas Tech, I mean, Taj Brooks, I believe he had a pretty solid day as well. They haven't played yet. I was getting confused with my rushing attacks. Taj Brooks had a good day against Baylor. So that's something to bring up here in my look through this week. So looking at K-State specifically and this matchup with Baylor that we're so blessed to have on ESPN Plus this weekend, fourth straight week that Baylor is playing an ESPN Plus game. Why
are they the kings of ESPN Plus? You know, for football, the kings of ESPN Plus for basketball will be UCF. I think they play almost every game on ESPN Plus.
That's just good business by the Big 12. This is Baylor's fourth straight game on ESPN Plus and their sixth total this season. And given what's left, there is a just real chance that they finish the season out there. And imagine if K-State fans had to watch six games in a season on ESPN Plus. There would be some lost minds.
The funny thing is, I think every team has to basically have at least one game on ESPN Plus. I think that's – so I think it's like whoever plays Baylor, you're on ESPN Plus.
Yes. Yeah. Not even Cincinnati has been saddled with this many ESPN Plus games. All right. Well, looking at this matchup, K-State got to stick in the college football playoff top 25. They were 23 last week. They dropped just two spots after the loss to Texas. What does that say to you, DY, about what the committee thinks of K-State? And then also to some extent Texas, because it's a respect thing there for how good they view Texas, that an overtime loss like K-State had doesn't drop them out of the rankings.
Yeah, I would say they're just kind of looking at the numbers and metrics too. A lot of the metric stuff, Kansas State, top 12, top 15, they recognize that they're one of the best three-loss teams in America. You have three losses there against Missouri, who's, if it wasn't for Georgia, would maybe be competing for the SEC East Championship, because I think they're second, right, still, even after losing to Georgia in the SEC East. You lost to Texas, who, to be honest, they're still a national title threat. So there's that. And then you lost to Oklahoma State, who could go to Arlington, probably should go to Arlington, as long as they take care of business. So, and you lost to Oklahoma State by 8. You lost to Texas in overtime. You lost to Missouri by 61 year field goal. It doesn't make you feel any better if you're a Kansas State fan. I'm not saying you should, but man, the margins are razor thin. I wrote this week. You have a lot of guys making plays this year, just like last year. They're just not making the play because all their wins are blowouts and all their losses are by one possession or less, or I'm not saying a fluke, but a crazy deal, like a miracle 61-yard field goal and a miracle basically red zone goal line stop in overtime.
Yeah, no, it's been like paper thin, the margins and the losses. And K-State, unfortunately, this season has either been on the opposite end of a bad bounce, or they just have not done enough. Whereas last year in some of those games, they pushed themselves over the top and they did enough. Now, I think you know, revisionist history. You could go back and look at last year and say that, honestly, K-State's going to do a very similar thing. It's just that the rest of the Big 12 this year is not as good as it was last year. So a team like Texas Tech, they're not beating Texas this season like they did last year. Or, I mean,
you never know.
It hasn't happened yet, though, is what I'm saying. Last year at this point, we had already seen some of these teams drop those games. It's just the disparity between if you are the haves in the Big 12 this year, which essentially there's like four of them, K-State, Texas, Oklahoma State, and KU. You could maybe throw Iowa State in there, but, you know, it's questionable. Oklahoma, I guess, maybe. But the haves have taken advantage of the lower teams when they've played them. It's just not happening. There's not that playing up ability this year.
I would agree. The only thing I said, look, I think Texas is going to beat Texas Tech this year. But here is an interesting way to look at that, is what I was thinking. Is I still think this year's Texas Tech team is better than last year's. And last year beat Texas. Now, the Longhorns, I think, are a more complete team than they were a year ago, too. Quinn Ewers is not going to beat himself as much as he did last year. And he still has the nation's better, not the nation, nation's second best tight end in Jatavion Sanders, probably. The best wide receiver core in the country, perhaps. And, well, we just found out, an elite defense. And Texas probably doesn't get enough credit for being as elite on defense as they are. And Kansas State's probably not going to get enough credit on offense for how they responded to that initial adversity and still put up, you know, quite a bit of offensive output. Got helped by some short fields, but at the end of the day, they cashed when they needed to. One play short again.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of plays there, a lot of opportunities. It seemed like for K-State, they thought that they had what they wanted. There were just some breakdowns that ultimately ended up costing them. So we'll see how they bounce back. I mean, we've seen it, obviously. Tough losses. K-State comes back. They're ready to go. But it was a little different, I would say, in this game because it felt like that there was one total segment of your game plan that was just completely negated by Texas. K-State could not run the ball to save their lives. I mean, how does K-State respond coming into this game now, and how conscious are they of, okay, we got to get back to running the ball well, and could they almost commit to the run too much against Baylor?
No, I don't think so, because Baylor can't stop anything. It's really that simple. Yeah. So I think there could be a little bit of a slow start, but I don't think it's really that – you overcommit to the running game again, because I don't think Baylor is really equipped to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, you know, I got confused earlier when I was going through there. I knew that one of the schools had given up a lot of, like, heavy running to Taj Brooks. But if you go through and you look at some of the games that Baylor has played against what I would call the better running backs in the league, the better running teams in general, Jonathan Brooks of Texas went for 106 on Baylor. Big day for him. Taj Brooks went for 170 against Baylor, and one that's kind of under the radar because he plays on a terrible team, but Corey Kiner of Cincinnati, who is a very talented running back, he ran for 129 on just 15 carries against Baylor, and Baylor won that game. So guys that can move the ball, they have done so on Baylor very, very well. And I guess the other one that I should throw out there is that UCF had a pair of 100-yard runners against Baylor. Johnny Richardson ran for 105, and R.J. Harvey ran for 95. So very, very much susceptible to the run, and I think that K-State will be able to exploit that. However, I also think that if you're K-State, you kind of want to play with the shiny new toy a little bit, and you recognize that the offense came out in the passing game against Texas and had their most success of the season. Guys starting to look like they stepped up. Will Howard kind of back to the form that was expected of him at the beginning of the year. I think that K-State is in a position right now to have the best form of their offense over the final four games of this season, with a good blend of run and pass and everything working together. And I think that they probably should go out and try to use both in a pretty equal manner against Baylor, and not just, oh, hey, you know what? We can run all over Baylor, so let's do it. I mean, it's fine if for some reason you find yourself struggling with Baylor and you just need to get the job done, however, but I don't think K-State will be in that position, and I think it would be kind of nice to see K-State go out there, show the balance, get the offense working in a good flow that sets you up best to head into your games with KU and Iowa State that are going to be tougher and ultimately mean a lot more.
Yeah, it just worries me a little bit. And I agree with that. I'd like a more balanced attack, but do you kind of how do you play it? You got KU in a week. It'll be your biggest Sunflower showdown since the 1990s, probably. And you're probably Texas, a big game. KU's probably your next biggest game after that. I'm not going to say KU, even though it's a rivalry, and your fans are going to feel like you have to win that, right? Because it is KU, and you haven't lost them in so many years. The Texas game was still more important than the KU game because of the Big 12 title implications that did exist. But that doesn't mean that this is important when they play KU. Does the team look ahead to that while also being hungover a little bit from the Texas loss? You got that sandwich that isn't ideal. And if you're Colin Klein or Chris Kleiman, how do you play it? Do you not want to show KU much? Or do you want to just overwhelm them with a ton to prepare for? Those are always two different ideas of how to really attack that. It'll be interesting. I don't think you really do anything quite in the middle. So, I to be honest, this is one of the more tougher games on the schedule for me to read this year. I felt like I had the script down of how most of these games were going to go. I had the Texas game completely wrong, though, because Kansas State couldn't run the ball, but I knew they wanted to establish the run. So I was right that they were going to try. Ran into more of a break wall than what I anticipated. But how hungover is K-State, or does it affect them? It hasn't in the past. How much are they looking ahead to KU? How much do they want to, like, cover up everything and not really show KU anything? Or how much do they just want to overwhelm KU with a lot of eye candy and give them, you know, even more to prepare for? Maybe that's why – maybe they play a bunch of Avery Johnson and Will Howard again to kind of throw another curveball at KU. Like, how much is that KU game in a week affect – what Kansas State's going to do against Baylor on Saturday? I think that's an interesting, you know, story within the game here. And maybe nothing. Maybe Chris Kleiman is going to do what he always tells his team to do, laser focused. It's this game, 1 week at a time. We're not thinking anything about KU and how we prepare for this game. So can you do that? Will it do that? I don't know. Like, yeah, this game could go a lot of different directions. It's kind of why I think K-State could be tight in the beginning and try to feel themselves out a little bit. I could see a slow start.
I don't think they're going to start slow. I think they come out and they start pretty hard and fast. I just the way that they've played this season, they've done well. And you think about, like, last week not being able to go out and start quick against Texas. They're for sure going to want to do it here in this game against Baylor. And I think the opportunity's there. And I think that you can find balance, but you can do it in a simple manner against Baylor. And I still, like, if you're looking at percentage breakdown-wise, I still think K-State should be pretty run-heavy in this game comparatively. But I don't want this to be, honestly, like, I don't want this to be like the Texas Tech game for K-State where there's only, like, 16 passes total attempted in the game, or, you know, TCU, they didn't throw it a lot. Like, you can run. We know that, but still put the ball in the air and try and make some things happen, because I think it's good for the receivers to try and keep stacking games on top of each other. But I don't think you have to go and throw everything out there just to overpower and woo Baylor before you play KU, because obviously you don't want to empty the book against them. So I think that there's a way to have it be done without it being just, you know, okay, here's exactly everything that we're going to need to do to beat KU next week.
Yeah, hell, I'd rather them. And like, I'm not saying this is what's going to happen either. And I agree with you. I don't want it to be that much run either. And because I don't want them to be seen as that team that just never throws the ball either, because that's no fun. It's going to be hard to recruit as well. And you don't want that. You know, the more I talked this out with you, man, I wouldn't, as long as it was working, I would still abandon it if I was like, oh shit, this is not working. But man, I wouldn't even mind. And they just kind of threw everyone a curveball and went 70-80% pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Baylor has been pretty sturdy against the pass this year, but a lot of that probably has to do with the attempts going against them, because they're so bad against the run. Teams are just like, let's run on them, let's do it.
And the game script.
Yes.
In game script, because when the other team is pounding your butt all game, they don't have to throw. They're just going to run the clock out and get rid of this game so we can get on to the next.
Yeah, and I think that there's a realm where this can be done in the right style. And, like, honestly, if you look at what Texas did against Baylor, it's probably along the same lines of what you would want to do if you're K-State. Texas was up 28-6 at halftime on Baylor, and in the game, Quinn Ewers threw the ball just 23 times, but he did it for 293 yards, and then you still ran the ball 34 times. And I think if you're K-State, like, you want to be around that 20 mark with pass attempts in this game.
Hopefully more than that. You know, what you would really like is just to have the ball so much that you get like 75, 80 plays. You get a lot of both.
Yeah, I think that's my only thing is looking at what other teams have done, especially teams that we think are at least heavily superior to Baylor, is that the amount of plays that have been ran it's not the highest. I mean,
so teams are explosive.
Yeah. Like Tech ran 68 plays on Baylor. And they scored 39 in that game. And Texas ran 59 plays and scored 38 against Baylor. So you go through these and look, it's not a ton of plays that these teams that have just kind of had their way have had to go out there and run. I mean, Iowa State ran 66 plays against Baylor.
That's a lot for them.
Yeah, that's true. And that puts them right in the middle, basically, of what Texas and Texas Tech did. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be kind of interesting to watch and see how K-State handles it, because I do think you want to find that balance and you want to be able to go out there and try and, I don't know that it's rewarding, but at least kind of keep the momentum going. Like, I think it would be a little foolish to go and have such a good week throwing the ball last week and not do it enough in this game to where you can't kind of keep it going. But you got to be smart about it. And I know that they will be, I'm sure, because you don't want to give too much away. But I think that the opportunity is there. And also, like, selfishly, I want to keep seeing Will Howard throw touchdown passes, since I said that he was going to break the record before the season. So we've got I said single season record. I wasn't too focused on. I didn't even know where that was at. So
how much for single season? How much away?
He needs 6 more to tie, 7 more to get it. He should make it. He's got 4 games left.
Four games.
So he should do it. But I would selfishly, I would also just like to see the 3 happen this week to get him the career one. I know that some people are like, well, you know, lifetime achievement. Somebody's got to have the record, and there are a lot of quarterbacks that have played at K-State, and I get it. You know, the year split isn't necessarily the most fair thing, but a lot of quarterbacks that have played at K-State that we revere as being pretty good, and it's a low record for a reason. So if he could go out and do it, A, it's a good thing for him, but also B, it shows that you're catching up to the times. Like, I would compare it to my beloved Royals, who for the longest time did not have their single season home run record be above 40. It was like 36 or 38 or something. And finally, Jorge Soler came through and took him over the 40 mark. I think he ended up with 48. And then Salvador Perez tied him like a year or two later on that. So I get it. It's small, but you got to start somewhere. So go ahead. Let's see it.
Yeah, and by the way, I would fight back a little bit on the Lifetime Achievement Award, too. Like, Will Howard, I know he played in 2020, but that was a wrecked year, and he didn't go in as the starter. 2021, yeah, he was not the starter. 2022, he was not the starter. Like, he played a bunch of half seasons, and coming in as a backup is not an easy thing to do either. So, and if you're the second best quarterback in 3 of the 4 seasons you played and you still break the record, I think that says a little bit about him and the success he's having.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, and he's thrown 33 touchdowns the last 2 seasons.
Not like he has does he have the most starts ever in Kansas State quarterback history? I don't think so.
I would have to check on that. But at this point, I wouldn't think that he has the most starts.
No, because he's had he had one season where he started, 6 or 7 games. Another,
yeah, he started 7 last year.
Did he start 6 in 2020, I think?
They played 9. They played 10 games in 2020, and he started 7 of them, I think.
So 7 last year, 7 that year. 14's a season, man.
Yeah. So
that's only one season. And he didn't – in 21, he didn't at all, did he?
In 21, he started the game at Oklahoma State, and he started the game against he started the game against Nevada. Then those he started those two games, and then Scholars, but and Texas in 21. Never forget the start of Texas.
Before this year, he had 16, 17 starts.
Yeah, so something like that.
That's like a season and less than half.
Like, yeah.
And he's going to break it. No, you know what I mean? Like, it's not – he's not breaking it because he's started all 4 years. He's still has started barely over two seasons worth.
Well, and to just kind of put this in perspective, if he were to reach – get seven more touchdown passes this season, which is what he needs to break the single season record, he would push himself to, in the last two seasons, like I said, he's at, you know, 33 right now, he would push himself to 40. 40 is what Jake Waters threw in his two seasons at K-State, 2013 and 2014, as a JUCO transfer. So he's doing the same thing that a lot of these guys did. He's just doing it in less time, or the same amount of time, essentially.
Yeah, so, it's not necessarily a lifetime achievement award if you compare it to them. Because if we say he started about 17 games, that's what kind of felt right. You add in the 9 that he started this year, even though he didn't play all of them, the whole games and a few of them, that's 26. That's exactly two seasons.
Yeah. No, that's very, very good point on all of those. So, I don't know. I push back on the lifetime achievement thing just because somebody has to have the record, and a low record suggests that, you know, obviously the K-State offense has not been in tune with what a lot of other places around college football have been. This is a step in the right direction, just like you mentioned receiver recruiting a little bit ago. Like, receivers have not wanted to play in K-State's offense, but that is starting to change ever so slightly because of what Colin Klein is doing to get them involved and how the offense works with the quarterback and everything else. And obviously, I mean, say what you will about Will Howard, but he's done a pretty solid job the last two seasons now of throwing the ball, and you have a guy in Avery Johnson that you feel like is going to be pretty good in that department moving forward as well. So just a couple things to note. All right, we've talked about a lot here in this game already. Is there anything that Baylor does that concerns you going into this game? Like, it's fine if you just say that, hey, Baylor sucks and K-State's going to dominate them, because – that tends to be the way that I think, and that's how the Big 12 has worked this year. But is there anything that K-State should be even remotely concerned about with Baylor?
K-State's got to be worried about themselves, I think, more than Baylor. That's the way I feel about it. What I will say is Baylor is a lot better with Blake Shapen rather than the alternative. So he can play a little bit as long as he's healthy. And man, they've been god-awful running the ball, so I'm going to feel really stupid about this. But Richard Reese was an All-Big 12 preseason pick for a reason, so he's still a talented dude.
Yeah. No, that's fair. What's odd about the Baylor situation this season, for people that haven't necessarily followed along with it, is that Blake Shapen has not been their problem.
His numbers are good.
Yeah, if you watched him last year, you thought Blake Shapen is the problem for Baylor. And this entire season, it's not been because of him. It's been literally everybody else. And it just goes to show that even if you have a good or average quarterback, they can't save you in a lot of ways. So I just think I think that K-State's going to be too much for Baylor. I don't see anything that overly concerns me, and so I'm with you. Like, it's just, if K-State is going to end up beating themselves, then that's going to be the issue in this game. But Baylor's been weird in a lot of ways this season with how they've operated. People probably think about their running attack and how that's worked out. They've been really odd in their usage in terms of how they've ran guys this year. Dominic Richardson, he's got just 81 carries on the season right now. Richard Reese, if you go look at what Richard Reese had go on, he carried the ball almost 200 times last season. He only totaled 57 this year, and he's played in every game for Baylor. That's the odd thing about this, is that it's not like he's, you know, been out for multiple games. He is playing consistently for Baylor, and for some reason, a guy that got 200 carries and ran for almost 1,000 yards last season, he's barely touching it. And some of that has to do with the fact that Baylor has found themselves in big holes in a lot of games. But something is very odd and off about how this team is operated this season. And K-State playing a home game, being pissed off after a loss, kind of finding their groove in a lot of categories right now. They should take care of big business against Baylor, and it should not be a difficult task.
I would agree. And if they beat themselves, the only thing I would say is Blake Shapen is savvy enough to take advantage.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's roll on here. Shift into we're going to go a little bit out of order here for a second. We are going to dive into the Big 12 scoreboard first and take a look at what's going on around the rest of the league, because the league title race is heating up. It's going on in a big way. And so we will first take a look at what's going on in the Big 12 scoreboard. First game up this weekend in the Big 12, Texas Tech on the road in Lawrence taking on KU, 11 a.m. kick on FS1. Only two Big 12 games on FS1 this weekend. That's quite the deviation from like the standard three or four that end up on there. The Big 12 dominates FS1. What do we expect from KU and Texas Tech? The line is a little interesting for KU being on the hot streak they are. They have the chance to get to 8-2, but they are only a 3.5-point favorite at home against the Texas Tech team that obviously has had their struggles this season.
I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask about KU anymore. I faded them. I had Oklahoma winning that one comfortably over KU. I had Iowa State beating KU last week. I'm probably done doubting them. Weird line, but it might be a very, very close game. I just have a hard time thinking Texas Tech wins.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't see Texas Tech winning that game. Just I don't know why anything would change. I mean, yeah, they could battle, but if they're going to battle, I still think 3.5 KU can handle at home against Texas.
I will say they've been more respectful with Bear Morton, quarterback at least.
It's true. Yeah, K-State definitely saw probably the worst version of Texas Tech, although they saw half of Baron Morton at least. BYU got full Jake Strong the entire game, so maybe
BYU. That was ugly, right?
Yeah, it was ugly. It was not good. Three interceptions again and everything else with it. So I don't know. We'll see what happens there, but it could be an 8-win KU team before we know it. All right. After K-State and Baylor go at 2 o'clock, 30 minutes later, O-State and UCF kick off 2:30 ESPN. Oklahoma State, team that is now in the driver's seat to get to Arlington because all they have left are the three newcomers outside of Cincinnati who they already got to play, but they have UCF, Houston, BYU left on the schedule. You've talked about like this is classic trap game scenario. Does Oklahoma State survive the trip to Orlando?
It is classic trap game scenario. Remember, UCF almost beat Oklahoma this year. So
yeah,
they were sitting there 1-5 in the Big 12, I believe the Knights are, but they're not a completely like they're not a team that's incapable of rising up and doing something, right? They just can't stop the run. So I think Oklahoma State should be able to survive, but with everyone thinking that's should be a close game, the books think that, the metrics think that. I just in being a letdown spot, the matchup means Oklahoma State should have no problem scoring, but it makes me think, especially Gus Malzahn, sometimes he can really do some creative things from an offensive standpoint. You know, I have a best bet in this game, obviously, too. I will say it spells out at least that UCF's going to be able to score.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a chance that UCF can put up some points. And, they, you know, since John Rhys Plumlee has come back and has played full-time, they have been able to put up some points. It's just he's also made some errors that have prevented them from winning games, basically, if you look at how it's gone down. I mean, they scored 28 last week, 28 against West Virginia, 29 against Oklahoma. They've put up points, and honestly, I mean, they've been over 30 points in all but a handful of Big 12 games. So even in losses, they've been able to find ways to score. But Oklahoma State
scored 31 on K-State.
Yeah. Well, you know, asterisk, but you know that's how it goes
on the road.
Yeah. So moving on after that, I think Oklahoma State gets it done. I also have a best bet from this game, so we'll get into that in just a moment. West Virginia and Oklahoma from Norman, 6 o'clock night kick on Fox. West Virginia going to just continue to try and scrap their way through this season. They've been impressive to not, you know, falter as much as I thought they could have. There were some opportunities there, but they've won two straight, beat up on some newcomers, and now they get to finish out. After Oklahoma, it's a very favorable finish for West Virginia, Cincinnati and Baylor on the docket. So we could realistically see an 8-win West Virginia team in a year where we thought they might struggle to win three and Neil Brown was going to get fired. Does West Virginia have a chance at OU this week, a team that has now lost, what, two straight games?
It wouldn't shock me if it was close, to be honest, because what we do know about West Virginia is that they have their flaws, just like anyone else, and maybe more than some teams, but they're tough as hell this year. They are tough as hell. And Oklahoma's a fraud, I think.
Yeah, well, we know this, at least an advisory right now for Brent Venables. We'll see how it goes. All right, Cincinnati, Houston, 6 o'clock, FS1. Houston should win this thing, but I guess there would be the realm where Cincinnati, who is still kind of looking for that first Big 12 win, they really get up for this game because it's their best chance to win one. But the line's only like 2.5 in favor of Houston. This could be a game where Houston, I think, probably wins pretty easily. Because I actually think, and I wrote it this week in Big 12 rankings, I think Houston is like the perfect example of a team that they're just not ready to play a Big 12 schedule week in, week out, but they're not a bad team. They're just going to have some bad games.
They're not, and they can play some offense. Obviously, mm-hmm. We know that. They have some good receivers. They get thumped really bad sometimes when they play the good Big 12 teams, although they did hang with Texas, so they can rise up too. Look, I think Houston wins that game as well. I think of the four newcomers, and we'll have our Big 12 power rankings out maybe by the time that this releases, but I think Houston's the best of the four newcomers at this point.
I think that there is a strong case to be made. I mean, BYU put themselves in position early to have the better record. They kind of stole a non-con win, but I think I am with you. And Houston, this would be big for them this weekend because they'd get to 5-5, and their last two games were Oklahoma State and UCF. If they could win two of these last three, Houston's getting to a bowl game this year, and that should be considered a significant win for Dana Holgorsen and Houston this season.
And there's multiple scenarios for Kansas State to try to get their path to Arlington, right? One of them is Oklahoma State winning out. One of them, there's another one I think where maybe Oklahoma State drops a couple games, right? You can look at it multiple different ways. Let's say Oklahoma State for some reason does get upset in Orlando this week. Houston beats Cincinnati, and they're fighting for bowl eligibility. They're going to play a really good game against Oklahoma State.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing what comes out of it. All right, another night game, Texas, TCU. Boy, ABC, giant losers this week to get this game as their Saturday night primetime game. Look, Quinn Ewers is going to start, it looks like, according to Steve Sarkisian now. TCU obviously has not been that good this year, and I think that Texas is probably ready to go out there and storm past TCU with some ease.
I agree. The Horns are so good when they're locked in and play a full four quarters, and obviously it's easier to do that when Quinn Ewers is your quarterback, rather than Malik Murphy. And I would say the Frogs this year, they're frauds compared to what maybe people thought they were going to be, but they're okay. The frauds, fraudy frogs, they're okay. They're just overmatched when they play the good teams in a Big 12. That's really what it is. What I will say is we saw this a little bit last year, and obviously they were good last year, so maybe that played a role. But TCU at night, sometimes a weird place to be.
Yeah, very true. We'll have to see.
Are they doing their blackout or whatever? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good point.
I mean, now they were good, so it's different. But that was as hostile of a road crowd. Like, you go into Texas, it's loud, but it's not necessarily hostile. They're not like, they don't want to like leap over the fence and like choke you out. Like, when Kansas State was at TCU last year, they were getting shit thrown on them.
It was pretty nasty last year. Those TCU fans, I don't think there's a lot of love there for K-State and TCU people anymore. So
no, and TCU fans, They're probably going to be the same way against Texas. You got to think that there's that little bit of vitriol as well.
TCU and Texas might be the two most arrogant fan bases in the state. I know that some would probably make a case for like Texas A&M, but I don't know that it's much arrogance for Texas A&M as it's weirdness. I think for TCU and Texas, it's just straight up snobby, rude, we're better than you. And I think both fan bases are as annoying as it can get. So
TCU just a little bit more nasty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Last game in the Big 12 this weekend. Get excited. This is a taste of what is to come for the future of the Big 12. Late night kick, 9:15 p.m. Iowa State at BYU. Iowa State's still an 8-point favorite in this game, but this is a scary situation to go into if you're Iowa State. Late road kick in Provo. BYU's got a pretty good record in night games up there. And yep. If Iowa State doesn't win this, there is a legitimate chance that they go from standing tied for first place in the Big 12 with 4 weeks to go in the season to not going to a bowl game and finishing 5-7.
I think Iowa State's in danger of losing this. I really do. You're right. BYU, night, home, weird place, weird game. A bit of a trap, so to speak, for the Cyclones. Also, probably a little overvalued by the teams that they played early in the season because of how stiffened their schedule is getting now. It was really backloaded, not necessarily front-loaded. They do have the win over Oklahoma State. That was before the Pokes turned it around that bye week. So I'm a little down on Iowa State, and I would say BYU is a really good bet this week. I didn't make it my best bet, I don't think. Maybe I did. But I would say the Cougars, I think that they're set up to do something this week against Iowa State just because I think Iowa State may start to implode a little bit. I will say this. If you're Kansas State, there again, the tiebreaker scenarios are going to get weird. And there's a couple more likely than the rest. But one of the couple ones that is maybe realistic, does it require an Iowa State win over BYU?
Well, I don't know about that. I think I would just hope for another scenario to work out and root for BYU to beat Iowa State. That'd be pretty funny. So,
yeah, I'm with you there. I think BYU at least covers.
Yeah, the 8 points there seems a little steep right now for me to trust Iowa State to cover the 8 points. So I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, let's roll on now. Best bets time. Here's a look at how it went last week. Did not go very well for me. I was 0-3. Boy, just Nebraska losers. And then the situation with Minnesota, Illinois, they scored points. Couldn't believe it. Actually, it's just because they scored a few extra points that I didn't expect. And then Will Howard, he about had the over in negative rushing yards, not positive rushing yards.
I will K-State say they
couldn't do jack running the ball.
I will say you deserve that for picking Big Ten West.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. That's totally fair. And that's I wear that, and you're right. I do deserve that. No doubt about it.
I'm 2-1. Bedlam under. Got a little close at the end, but game kind of unfolded the way that I thought it would. Sinek, that was a lock. He got that like in the first half, yeah. I think. USC, I should have took the USC over on points because I was right that they were locked in and they scored a lot. They scored 42. But to cover, you need a good defense. Yeah. And that team in LA does not have one.
Nope. All right. Well, here is a look at this week's best bets.
Do we have a total record?
Oh, no. I need to go through and piece all those together. Okay. You're kicking my ass, though, I'm pretty sure is what it would.
Yeah. Well, it's making up because I'm getting destroyed on 3-mo. So.
Also, I would offend people if I gave out my actual bets that I was picking, which last weekend included Texas, Philadelphia, and USC. So I took all three of those teams to beat my teams last week, and it worked out quite favorably for me. But people would probably get a little offended if I went that route consistently. So I'm just not going to tell you that I'm picking against K-State when I do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing good on this one, and I think I'm doing good in real life, too. I'm still up on the year, but I think I'm like 10 games under on Powercat game day. I think – I'm like on the, we do a lead pipe lock in the week of 3-mo. I think I'm like 1-8. So it's not been ideal in the other shows. I'm fired this one. Colorado plus 10.5. They're playing Arizona, who's been hot. Mm-hmm. But I think their people are starting to probably overvalue Arizona a little bit just because of what they've been able to do. Being a 10.5 favorite on the road, I think is a little too much for Arizona. And if you go look at what Colorado's done, of course, they have slowed down.
Great backdoor cover team.
Yes. As dogs, they are covering a lot. They even, hey, they hung with Oregon State last week.
Yes. And that was a late cover that they chipped in there. So they are doing it.
Yeah. And then UCF over 30.5. We talked about this game earlier. The books say it's going to be close. The metrics say it's going to be close. Oklahoma State coming off the big, huge Bedlam win says it'll be close. They're probably not going to stop Oklahoma State's offense. So that means if it's going to be close, UCF scoring too. UCF over 30.5.
Okay. And then you got the Cats second half minus 9.5. What's the thinking behind this one?
Slow start, pull away.
Okay. I get it from the sense of K-State against these bad teams has given up nothing in the second half this season. So even if K-State is, you know, if they're up big after the first half and they've called off the dogs, they're still going to score at least, you know, 10, 13 points in the second half.
Especially when your second unit might be Avery Johnson.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, you've got a better second unit than a lot of other situations. All right, this week, it's the easy one. It feels like Ollie Gordon over 144.5 rushing yards against UCF. As we've discussed, UCF, it is a massive number. But honestly,
no, I would take the over too. But
Ollie
hilarious.
Gordon to go for that against anybody you might do right now, let alone UCF, the worst rush defense in the Big 12. Anybody with a pulse and half a leg has ran for a lot of yardage against UCF. So I will take Ollie Gordon over the 144.5. And then Mizzou money line against Tennessee at home. Mizzou's plus 1.5. So if you're just going to take him at plus 1.5, you might as well take a money line. And I don't know, like, I want to like Tennessee. There's a lot I like about Tennessee. I like Rocky Top. I liked what they were last year. And look, I love Joe Milton. I love the idea of him at Michigan. It did not work out. And I tricked myself into saying, you know what? Well, maybe it's time it happens at Tennessee. He's really not been very good this year. They're still a fine team, but the game's in Columbia. Mizzou has been pretty good this year, and I think that Missouri has a lot more going for them to be able to score than what Tennessee does. Mizzou's defense, as we know, is pretty stout, so I'm taking Missouri at home as the underdog money line, and then I'll just take K-State minus 20.5. I mean, they've killed every bad team they've played this year. They've been able to hit that mark. I think they do it again against Baylor. There's a reason why it's a big number. It's because K-State's going to be able to go out there, take care of business. So it's simple, it's clean, but I think K-State covers their 20.5 fairly easily against Baylor.
You know, I set a score on Power Cag Indy and 3 Mile, and I'm probably going to make a detour there. Yeah, I'm probably going to amend it because you talk about this game enough, you start to form thoughts and feel good about how maybe the game will unfold to a certain script. And I think I'm coming around to Kansas State covering as well. And I think it's because of a big second half, which is why my best bet for the game is what it is. So I guess we'll dig into that a little bit now. We'll go to we're ready for our pick. I guess we got MVPs. If it goes well for Kansas State on offense, you know what? Give me a receiver. Give me Keegan Johnson sustaining.
We're back. We're back, baby.
Keegan Johnson back. Defensively, I'll just stick with a hot hand on defense, too. Jake Clifton's been one of the best defensive players on the field, so I'll stick with him.
Yeah, Jake Clifton was good in spots against Texas, had a big tackle for loss at one point, and it's been big to have him back. And obviously, he dealt with some injury stuff earlier in the year, but getting closer to his normal self. Look, I think for K-State offensively, it seems like the easy answer to go running back. So DJ Giddens victimized UCF, and it's been kind of calm and quiet over the last couple of weeks. I think DJ Giddens probably has a pretty big day for K-State, even though I would implore them to throw the ball more. I do think that he's just going to be able to do a lot against Baylor. And so I'll throw DJ Giddens out there offensively. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, Baylor has had to throw it a lot this year in a lot of circumstances because they found themselves down. And like I mentioned earlier, they're just not wanting to give it to the running backs for whatever reason, just even to begin with in games. So there are a lot of things to kind of think about and look at in these circumstances. But I'm going to go with the defensive back against Baylor for the defensive MVP. I've been on it all year long. It's going to happen at some point. Marquise Siegel is going to end up with a pick six. He at least is not going to let one fall through his hands this week. Blake Shapen's going to put the ball in the air too many times. So I'm going with Marquise Siegel. We'll see what happens. And I'm only going with him because he'll get the vanity stat, or at least one of them, because in a lot of these games against inferior opponents, the DBs really haven't even been tested in these games. That's how good everybody else has been defensively, where there's been a lot of throwaways or, you know, scrambles for a yard or just a lot of things that even when the DBs have covered well, there's just not been any opportunities for them to get their hands on balls. It's been against these better teams and they've missed their chances. Marquise Siegel is not going to miss every chance. At least I don't think he will. So I think the stone hands turn into velvet gloves for one game this year. And it will be this game against Baylor because Blake Shapen will put it on him.
Okay. And I could see this game being like a 17-7 halftime lead, a little bit of a slow start. And then Kansas State basically wins the second half 21-7. So I'll say 38-14 Kansas State.
I think this game is going to be fairly similar to the Houston game. But I think that K-State probably goes out and I'm taking them 38-13. I think that Baylor can probably get a few more scores. There is the talent still, even though they haven't been running it as much. They've got talented running backs that could maybe bust through. Obviously, we know K-State's explosive run defense has been pretty bad this year. So I think Baylor can sneak a few points on them. But I think 38-13 is probably the number. K-State scores a lot of touchdowns early in the game. There's probably a kick at some point in there for Chris Tennant. 38 has been about the number that a lot of teams that are talented have been able to get to on them. Like I mentioned, Texas and Texas Tech earlier. So I'm taking K-State by the final score of 38-13. And I wouldn't be surprised if K-State was able to get above 40 as they've been able to do in a lot of these games against inferior opponents so far this season.
I forgot to squeeze it in. Wearing the Army shirt today.
Oh, well.
Big win over Air Force last week.
Yep, great. Just pre-supporting one of K-State's opponents for next season. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. So everybody forget that DY was doing this.
No, I'm picking the rival of a team that already beat K-State.
It's true. Yeah, never forget 4 years ago.
Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, gosh. What's your gut feeling right now where K-State ends up bowl game wise? That's a good conversation because that's a thought right now is that K-State wins out. You think you're in a good spot to go to a decent bowl game, but you just want to avoid Memphis at all costs.
I don't see them going to Memphis because I think there's still a good chance you win out and finish 9-3.
Yeah.
If you do that, it depends if the Big 12 can get two in near six. But I think they're in the wheelhouse of the Alamo Pop-Tarts right now.
Yeah, I think so. The Pop-Tarts Bowl guy, he's been to a handful of K-State games this year. I think he's been to three of them now. He was, I guess, at the game in Austin last week. He was at the game in Lubbock, and then he was in Manhattan for the TCU game, I believe, to TCU or Houston. And the rumor has it that another Pop-Tarts Bowl rep will be in the house this weekend. So, and K-State's never been to Orlando. We know that Iowa State got to go however many times because Jamie Pollard is a kiss ass. So I think that Orlando seems like the likely fit for K-State this year.
It'll be interesting. Yeah.
Just no Memphis. No Memphis at all.
I doubt it's Memphis. I could see Orlando. I'm actually, you know, selfishly pulling for San Antonio. Never been there.
Oh, well, never forget the Alamo. We'll see. The issue is going to come down to how this all just works out because the Big 12 is probably only getting one team into a college football, like a New Year's Six game, unless Texas wins out and gets help, and so they can be in the playoff, and then the Big 12 would get two in there. But I think right now the Big 12 is probably trending to just getting one, which means that that then leaves your second place team basically up to the Alamo. So K-State will have to prove themselves to get to go to Orlando.
I will say is Texas can easily win out. And if they do,
yeah,
they're in position to maybe be the they can get to the playoff if they win out.
Yeah. They're we'll have to see. Here's what's so wild about this is looking at the like the way that this works out in the Big 12's bowl selection process this year. Feels like maybe it used to be a little bit of a gap, but the Sugar Bowl and the at-large spot or whatever, those are the tie-ins for the Big 12. Now, this year, I think the Sugar Bowl is actually a playoff. So I think the Big 12 champ ends up going to, like, the Cotton or something. But it's just the Alamo Bowl and then the Pop-Tarts and then the Texas Bowl, and then it's the Liberty Bowl. So there's not a big margin for error there for K-State if something wacky were to happen. And sorry to anybody that really enjoys Memphis. It is just not a fun bowl game to go to.
Beale Street is fun for a night or two, but aside from that, there's not a lot in Memphis, and the bowl game itself is pretty
it's same weather as it is here. It's like 40 degrees and it's a dumpy stadium, and no, never again. And then my Memphis experience with John and Mitch on the road at K-Man was sharing a bed with Mitch and falling asleep on New Year's Eve in the hotel room when I'd ordered pizza, and I woke up to like 1,000 calls from the delivery guy. And I was just like, I've had a long day working. Just keep it to yourself. Happy New Year. And I wasted like $20 on pizza that was delivered to me. So
yeah,
not my place.
I ate a burger, a Crystal, and mustard on it. And if anyone knows me, I have the biggest aversion of anybody to anything to mustard. And, you know, a little hungover. But that mustard did not stay down. It's literally repulses me. I can't stand mustard.
All right. Well, we found out one key thing in this KSO show. It is that DY is the guy at baseball games that is vigorously rooting for either ketchup or relish to win the hot dog race, and is probably screaming F you at mustard coming down the first baseline when he's about to cross the ribbon and get the win. Just good luck to the mustard guy if Derek Young is attending a game, because you're going to hear it from him. So we'll see how it goes for all the mustard lovers out there. Don't share that love with DY. All right. K-State, Baylor this weekend, 2 p.m. It's on ESPN+. Unfortunate that you guys that won't be at the game have to deal with that. My condolences. Hopefully this is the last game K-State has to play on it all season. I think it will be. And if you're Baylor and you're sick of playing games on ESPN+, try not to suck. All right. For Derek Young, I'm Mason Voth. This has been the KSO Show. Stay locked in with everything we got going on at K-State Online. Over on On3, lots of great information in the lead-up to the game with Baylor, and also lead-up into the game with Bellarmine as the Wildcat basketball team opens their season, at least the home season, tomorrow night, Friday, I guess, this is when it's coming out. So today, we're recording this on Thursday. But Friday night, Bellarmine, going to be a nice weekend. And also, shout-out to Jason Mansfield and the K-State volleyball team. Swept number 3 Texas on Wednesday to have a pretty impressive victory there. 3 straight wins at home against some top 10 opponents for the Wildcats, and they're doing it in dominant fashion. So things are going pretty well for K-State sports right now. Football tries to continue the trend on Saturday as they look for win number 7 against Baylor.